There we go.
There we go.
Now we're on track two.
So now I have to read this stuff into the script.
You're on. On to the 3-4. Go ahead.
Today is October 16th, 2007. We are at the Atlantic Coast Bank at 8th and Center in Fernandina Beach, Florida. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. We are interviewing Mary Agnes White, who was born Mary Agnes Wolfe. She was born December 7, 1923, in Mobile, Alabama. My name is Bobby Faust, and I will interview the subject on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Assisting me is Mac McCaffrey, who will operate the recording equipment. We will now begin the interview. Mary Agnes, why don't you start by telling us where you were on December 7th, 1941, when you heard that the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor?
It happens to be my birthday, the day that went down in infamy, but I was born first. But I was visiting my very good friends up at Wesleyan College in Macon, Georgia. They were a year ahead of me in school, and they'd already gone and were freshmen at Wesleyan, and I was up for the weekend. And, of course, we were all in shock and could not believe it, and it was just unbelievable that it had happened.
And so after your visit, you came back to Amelia Island to finish high school.
Oh, yes, it was just a weekend visit that I'd gone up there.
And when did you get involved in your civilian work as a plane spotter here on the island?
It was in through school and different ones of us that were doing things in the war effort, so to speak. And my good friend Suzanne Hardy and I were a team. And there was a little spot of shack, I guess you'd call it, out at the beach. It's what we call Main Beach now. And I have pictures of the two of us sitting on the top of it. And they gave us a little training session to decide which planes were what. Any plane that flew over, we had a telephone and you'd call, pick it up, and you had a direct line to Jacksonville or to the Army base or wherever we were calling, and would tell them what we were seeing.
Okay, so what basically your training was how to identify what kind of aircraft.
Yes.
Did you ever spot anything other than a U.S. aircraft?
No. There's some interesting stories of things that were on the beach, like a dog that didn't understand anything but German commands.
Tell me about that.
Well, we had a Coast Guard. I'm sure you've interviewed some of those folks that were here, and we called it the Horse Patrol. And so they would go up and down the beach, and they discovered this dog one morning, and nobody ever really knows where he came from. There were some people, they say, that were put ashore in on the beaches in Jacksonville.
Some Germans.
Yes. You know, there are books about that and a lot of history on
and
that.
And so this dog only understood German commands. Isn't
and we
that?
Know where he came from or what happened, or how he happened.
Wow. Any other particular incidents that happened here on Amelia Island?
Of course, we had to keep our blackout curtains on the beach side. And at that point, what we call the hill, which has been cut down now, but when you were going to the beach, you had to turn your lights off to parking lights when you were driving towards the beach so you wouldn't silhouette the ships out there.
Oh.
And there were several blown up, or there were several incidents. We don't know exactly what happened, but all of a sudden the whole beach would be covered with black tar and black oil. You'd walk and get just caked on the bottom of your feet, because I grew up on the beach. I was always out there. And you'd get this gunk all over the bottom of your feet walking on the beach, and it was stuff that had washed in from the sea, probably from ships that had had trouble.
Wow. What was the attitude of the civilians during the war, and what were your experiences during the war?
Well, everybody was very cooperative. We, of course, had rationing. I always said my mother loved me better during the war than any other time, because she was an ardent coffee fiend, and I don't drink coffee, so she got my coffee ration. But anyway, we did have rationing, and, of course, gas rationing, and you had to pool, carpool, and plan things you did so that you sure your gas went far enough. My dad was stationed. He was head of oral surgery at Parris Island all during the war, and he drove back and forth. Mommy stayed here in the home here. And so Dad would come home a lot. So a lot of people gave him gas tickets so he could make his trips back and forth.
Wow. Was there a lot of efforts? I mean, I hear about rolling Band-Aids and doing...
The ladies all got together, particularly at the churches, and rolled bandages. And we collected things. And you used a lot of different recipes that didn't have all the things that show you as little sugar as possible and all that sort of thing, because it was all rationed.
Any other particular incidents or
we didn't have particularly a lot of trouble here in that way that I remember or knew anything about.
Were soldiers and sailors coming here
lot during the war? It was an interesting time. Camp Stewart, that's up in Georgia, camp had camping anyway, on sent them off down here to camp, and they'd go to North Beach, where we have North Beach now, and of course there's a revetment has been put up since then, and that was very low at the time. If you had any rain at all, they were almost underwater, and they had the water they had to contend with, their mosquitoes. Boy, the mosquitoes would be bad up there too.
During the Civil War, the soldiers complained about the mosquitoes on this island too.
That's right. Well, it was always true. We had a lot of them. Again, later, my dad was head of the mosquito control here, and he took care of a lot of that at that time. They messed up.
So did you have dances for the soldiers?
Oh, yeah, we had a USO. There was one downtown upstairs over the building on the corner across from the post office, and we had a USO. I think that's where it was. And then at that, over that point, yeah, we had the little log cabin, too, and they used to have parties there. But as I said, the Coast Guard were the ones that were stationed here that we knew, because they were the horse patrol.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, that was the most interesting service, I should think, to have been in. And then the boys came from Camp Stewart, and then, of course, we had Coast Guard putting in and out from the boats around here, too. And we had sailors and Air Force from Jacksonville flying around this area all the time.
Practicing and things like that. Uh-huh. Did you go to college during the war, or did you stay here?
No, I went to college. I went my first year to Macon, to Wesleyan, and then I transferred to Valdosta to GSCW, which is now the Valdosta University. University of Valdosta University. It's a branch of the University of Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And it's a right big... When I went, it was only a women's college. But they had a camp there. Oh, what was the name of that? But it was an Air Force camp. And we graduated every other class. It wasn't kosher to go with a boy in every class. You had to skip a class to graduate. So you always... met a different one. So we went to, we knew a lot of the guys during the war. And we had dances at college, and they came in every weekend, Friday and Saturday, the parties we had at school.
Did you graduate from college?
Oh, yeah, I graduated from Valdosta.
And that would have been in 1942,
wouldn't it have been?
No,
44. No, I graduated from high school in 46,
yeah. And then,
I graduated from high school in 41, 42, and graduated from college 4 years later, whatever.
So that would be 46,
yeah. 46, 47, That's not my schedule exactly, because
it's close enough.
Yeah.
Went to New York. Okay, so after you graduated college, what did you do?
My roommate and I went to New York and lived for a year. And my degree is in chemistry and speech, of all things. And so I went up and had a job in research chemistry at Brooklyn Polytech.
Oh, wow.
And I was working on chlorophyll, and it was very interesting. And then Rachel was a model, my roommate, and we were up there for a year in New York. I was in New York when the war was over, and that was a most interesting day. You know, for days in Times Square and Grand Central, if you walked under the down where the subways were, you could just hear them stomping up in Times Square. It was so interesting.
So that wasn't you in the picture with the Navy guy
kissing? No, it's not that one. But I was. It was mighty. I went to a play the night the war was over in Japan. No, in Europe, I guess. And it was the one about the carousel. Is it carousel?
Uh-huh.
And they during the war, when the curtain went up on the Broadway plays, they excuse me, before the curtain went up, the cast came out and everybody stood and sang Star Spangled Banner. And boy, that night, I still think about it. It was so magnificent.
Oh, it was, to have that war over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what made you decide to join the Red Cross and go over to Europe?
I'd always wanted to travel and go places, and I thought I wanted to go to Central America, and I had an uncle who spent a great deal of time down there. Uncle Raymond said, Shunk, you don't want to go down. Shunky's my nickname, family nickname. He'd say, you don't want to go down to Central America. It's too hard on women. The climate's bad.
What's your nickname?
S-H-U-N-K-I-E, Shunky. And I don't know, one a black nurse a long time ago gave it to me. But anyway, Uncle Raymond would say, Shunk, you don't want to go to Central America. The weather's too hard on women. So then the war came along, and you had to be 23 to join Red Cross. They wanted more, but they didn't want the youngsters that were too wild, I guess, was the story. So I wasn't old enough to do that until I was 23, and I was 23 and 46, and so in the spring of 47, I went overseas. Oh,
so you just signed up for the Red Cross?
Uh-huh, they had a call for the Red Cross class, and it turned out we were the last class that went over. After that, the Red Cross is an emergency organization, so they had formed. I went over with club work now, I wasn't in giving out hot dogs. Well, we did give out coffee and donuts too, but I mean, it was not a medical side of it.
Right.
It was the club work, and so they had us go.
Mac?
Well,
Mary Agnes, we were talking about you had just joined the Red Cross, and that you were in the club.
Part of the work rather than the other. And so while I was in Europe, apparently the Red Cross felt like it was, and we were in the occupation. I was in the occupation.
In Germany.
But so the war was over at that point. And so the Red Cross felt like they were weren't in an emergency situation anymore, and so the army agreed to take over the club work, which was simply R&R for the troops and for them to enjoy have a pastime and enjoy themselves.
So your job was to throw parties?
Absolutely. I loved it too. I played bingo. Lord, did we play bingo. And danced 1,000 miles, I guess. And as I had said earlier, the music we had, of course, we used jukeboxes all the time, but the live music we used were the American troop bands that were over there, because all the army bands had little orchestras. The guys liked to play their instruments, so, and they had orchestras, and they would play the music that we were used to dancing to, because they as they explained it to me, they slid their notes, whereas the Germans played formally every note. So when you had a German orchestra, it was more like a concert, and the Americans played. Well, of course, we swing,
yes,
and
yes.
We jitterbugged. It was the dance of the time.
Right. Tell me what it was like to be in Germany after the war. What were your impressions of Germany and the Germans?
The ones we knew, of course, were basically very nice, and they didn't mind us. I don't know, maybe they hated our guts, but they were very nice to us. because they were working for us, and they were working for food. And as I was saying earlier, they worked for we all bartered while we were in Germany. The German money and the army money we used, of course, they changed that regularly so that because of the black market. And so people were using cigarettes. When you went, like when I'd go out to dinner, you always had an open pack of cigarettes. And for a tip, you left the cigarette on the table for the waiter. That was rather than money. And that, as I say, we weren't bartering with cigarettes a lot over there. And we got, our ration was a carton and two packages of Philip Morris. I don't know why you could have a carton of whatever you wanted. And a two package of Philip Morris was the weekly ration.
What was Germany like? It was a beautiful,
beautiful country. I went from the north. I was first stationed in the North Sea, and my first club was the Wolf's Den. So, and my name was Wolf, so I always felt like there was some reason they sent me there. And it was an on post club, which meant it was a club they had on at Camp Gordon, but then the other two were clubs in the downtown area that the soldiers came to, and one was in Bremerhaven and the other was in Regensburg. So I started out up in the north by the North Sea and ended up in Bavaria, and it was perfectly beautiful country everywhere you went. Now I was of course, only in the American sector. I traveled some. I went to Berlin, so I traveled in the Russian sector. And while we were in the north, we spent a lot of weekends in Hamburg. And we had a Jeep that could drive ourselves well on our off time.
And Hamburg was in which section, do you remember?
It was British.
British.
In the British sector. Mm-hmm.
Did you find much difference between the different sectors?
The Germans said that the Americans were too easygoing, and they didn't have as much respect for us as they did for the British. They did not like the Russians. They said they were entirely too hard on everybody. But the British ran a tight ship, and they all said that the British ran the best, the most military, they felt like, from their German point of view. That was what our help always told us.
Did you see, was your impression of Germany mostly bombed out buildings?
Yes, and it was dark. That you didn't have the street lights at night. There was no light everywhere, and it was all rubble. My pictures that I have are all of rubble. And it's amazing how fast you get used to living like that, because suddenly we'd go out of the country, go to Switzerland or France or England or something, and there was light everywhere, and the buildings weren't bombed like they were in Germany, and they were cleaning up rubble everywhere. That's a big part of the German economy at that time, was cleaning up the place.
Did the Germans seem optimistic, depressed, downtrodden, beaten? How would you?
Well, of course, the ones I was associated with were working for us, and they were being fed. They worked for food, of course, and they were great people. They were just as nice as they could be. Charlie, I know, worked for us. He was our cook at my first base, and I remember his telling me one time that in the next war, they fight with us against the Russians.
They were planning that. They understood that. Better than we did.
They didn't like the Russians at all. And of course, we had the Cold War we fought. It was starting even then.
Did you feel that when you went over to the Russian sector? Did you feel some of that tension?
We ran into that. Well, I went into Berlin. There was a club. We had a club in Berlin. Although it was in the Russian sector, but there was still an American club, and they had American billets over there for the Red Cross. And so they were going to close that when they were getting ready to close, chance for a special service. So the girls were invited to come over if we had time for a little look-see, for us to get a little extra travel and to see what we wanted to see. And it was very interesting going in. There was a two-track, we had to go in on railroad, on the train, and they had taken up one of the railroad tracks. So if something was coming, a troop train or a supply train or anything was coming in, of course we had to be sidetracked while they went in. It was we were protected. We had armed guard going with us, and there was a car that was the radio car that brought up the end so they could radio out if anything happened to us while we were in the Russian sector. Well, and it was very, very interesting.
Yeah.
And the Berlin seemed to be the worst that I saw of the bombed areas. And the people were, they looked more downtrodden, and they were, of course, cleaning up. I mean, that's the pictures I have are of them doing that.
How long were you in Germany?
A year. Uh-huh. I went in on Easter Sunday, and I left for Frankfurt on an Easter Sunday. My dad had a heart attack, and my mother called to ask me to come home, so I came home on emergency leave, but I didn't go back. He got along fine. He
mm-hmm.
was
okay.
He got over it, and so.
Any other particular reminiscences or images that you have of
the post-war world? We had a great time. Of course, I enjoyed my travel too. I had one leave to Paris and London, and then my second leave was to Switzerland to St. Moritz, and they had the Winter Olympics that year.
Oh, wow.
It was the first time they went back to having the Olympics after the war. And that was the most interesting. And I saw Barbara Ann Scott skate, and Barbara Ann Scott lives in Fernandina now.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
She lives down the beach, down at the plantation. Yeah. We've talked. And little, I had pictures of her.
Little tiny, you know her.
Yeah.
Little tiny gal. She's
very vivacious.
And dressed beautiful all the time.
And very interesting. And I have pictures of her that I took of her skating. I showed her.
Oh, wow. Oh, I bet you she really loved
fun.
To see that.
Well,
what year was that again?
That would have been 1947.
Okay, thanks.
And
1947-48. It would have been 48, I guess, right?
I went over in 47. Okay.
Yeah,
well, it was
the
winter of 40.
It would have been
January, February of
48.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we rode in sleighs. We stayed in a little town close to St. Moritz, and went back and forth in horse-drawn sleighs, and that was interesting. We even, when I was stationed in Regensburg, we used horse-drawn vehicles a lot there, too. And that was an interesting place. We were in an old monastery. They told us the buildings were so old in Regensburg. And Patton had been there ahead of us, and boy, Patton had put plumbing in everywhere. You could be surprised at the places you find plumbing, and all the facilities that were there, but we were billeted on the third floor of the building, and of course the hot water didn't run up there, so when you took a bath, somebody heated your water for you downstairs, and they'd come find you playing cards or something and say, "Miss Aggie, go take a bath before your water gets cold." So.
Were there restrictions on you as women? Did they have rules and regulations for you to make sure that you stayed on the straight and narrow or anything like that? Or were you pretty free to do whatever?
No, we were very free when we went in and had orientation classes, of course. And they told us that if anything happened, if there was any trouble, please not to ever hide it, to come right to them and they'd help or do something. I think this had something to do with the fact they wanted us to be older when we went in. We were 20, had to be 23 to go overseas, and at the time I went, and I think that was just to get people who had maybe sowed their wild oats a little bit and were ready to settle down. But we had a good time, and everybody was very good to us, and they were very respectful of the Red Cross. We had jeeps that we drove all over the country in, and of course the Bahnhofs were badly bombed, and we were always having to go around and find detours, but the Bahnhofs were great driving. But it said American Red Cross, and you never passed out for GI. You always. It took me the long time when I got back home. My husband and I married soon, a year later after I got home. And Bob would say, "Honey, we can't pick up everybody on the road." And I'd say, "You never rode by anybody in Germany." Because, of course, that American Red Cross across there, that meant. And they were all so good to us. And, of course, if we were ever in trouble, you'd have a bunch of GIs looking after you right away, helping you and doing, helping.
Those were the good days, weren't they?
Some people did not have good thoughts about, I mean, some of the GIs maybe didn't have good thoughts of the Red Cross girls, but I always had a great deal of respect and enjoyed my friends so much over there.
How many girls were over there with you?
We'd have three or four, and depending on the size of the club. At the On Post Club, I think there were only four of us, but at the Spot Club downtown in Bremerhaven, we had, five or six.
Did you generally travel together, like when you went to Paris or St. Moritz?
Mm-hmm. You could. We did. There were several of us that were real close friends.
Okay, so you came back here in 1948. What was it like to be living on Amelia Island in 1948?
Oh, it was great. I came home, and of course, I came home because he was sick. I found out soon after I got here he was going to be all right. He just had to take it easy. So soon after that, somebody came by and got me and said, okay, let's go to the beach to Moore's Jook and meet everybody that's come since then. And I met my future husband that night, as a matter of fact.
Was there an influx of people onto Amelia Island after the war? I mean, did the economy pick up or anything like that?
You see, we were a very rich town. Always, because we have two mills, the shrimping industry and the tourist industry, and all the people that supply those industries, all living on the island and sort of within the city limits. And we at those times in the 40s and the 50s were the richest per capita city in the state of Florida.
Wow,
for a while because the mills were outstanding, and I thought had great race relationships because we had good schools, excellent teachers, and the black and white worked together, and we had a great blue collar group here, and everybody seemed very happy. We enjoyed the island, and growing up here was just wonderful. We had the beach all to ourselves because we did bonfires, and we drove on the beach, and always had a jeep or something of that sort to ride in, mm-hmm. fished and crabbed, and it was all ours and walked on the beaches. So we enjoyed that.
I love
so
that
much.
Life.
What's that?
I love that life.
Max said he loved that life.
I would have loved that life.
It was great to grow up here. It really was.
How did you stay on the island your whole married life, or did you?
Yes, we did. I happened to live in the same house that my mother and father had before me, and somebody in the family's been there since, in the 30s.
When did you notice significant changes on the island? Because the island's much different now than
it
was.
We were the best-kept secret in Florida for years and years and years. And then, wasn't it in the 70s when Frazier came down and started the plantation?
Amelia Island Plantation,
and
yes.
Then he... Over it. My husband was a building supply business, so we followed it with great interest. And he went overextended. He bought a place in Puerto Rico too and tried to open down there and got in trouble and went bankrupt. And we have a picture in our house that they gave us that they had a bunch of prints made from a local artist. And it's the most expensive piece of art we have because they paid off 10 cents on the dollar. And they owed the lumber yard a good bit of money. And so, but we laughed about that a lot. But they started, I guess, in the 70s with the plantation. And then after they went broke there, they pretty much had people who had homes there. Well, they weren't encouraging the tourists at the mm-hmm. plantation that much. And then later, that apparently financially didn't work as much. So then they started advertising heavily. And so it was after the 70s that we really started
the population.
Seeing people started growing and coming in because folks really didn't know that much. We had a Georgia beach always. When the beaches first opened up back in the 30s, it was a summer Beach or some tourists came, and we always called North Beach Georgia Beach and South Beach with the where the locals went more. And but we have lots and lots of Georgia people that grew up down here too and always came back. They loved it. And Sliders now, it was the Seaside Inn. That was the big hotel out there. And many of our young friends came here as young people to work at the Bills and honeymooned there.
Oh.
So they'd bring their young wives down and interview, and then lots and lots of them stayed.
The population was just a couple of thousand, wasn't it?
Well, I think it was 5,000 or 6,000, maybe on the island. Of course, the island and the city have always been separated some, so it wasn't too big.
Okay, is there anything else that you wanted to add about your wartime experiences or your post-war experiences?
No, not particularly. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I had a great time and enjoyed Europe so much. And the people I met and the people we lived together.
It was a wonderful experience
for
a young woman at the time.
Yeah.
Matt, can you think of any other questions that you have to ask?
No.
I think I was lucky. I'm an only child, and I thought for my mother and father to allow me to do all those things was good.
That's true, especially in the 1940s. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know they were very broad-minded about it, very good about letting me go and do things.
I have a question. What did you think about the level of devastation you saw that we incurred on the Germans, the bombing? Do you have any opinions about that?
Well, it was pretty much retaliation. That was a war of necessity for us. I don't know if the rest of them have been so much, but what could we do? I mean, except defend ourselves, so to speak. And if we hadn't done it over there, they'd have come to us, don't you think?
If they could have.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but I don't know what else you could have done, but Hitler was pretty bad. I mean, we had to fight him. That was,
and he wasn't going to surrender unless he had to.
Unless he had to. I mean, there wasn't anything else we could do, I didn't feel like, but defend that. I mean, England was pretty badly bombed, too. Germany did their share of devastation in that area. Did you ever see England? I mean, I was over there too, and they had cleaned up faster than Germany had, but they were pretty badly bombed too.
So were the Russians.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the Russians were.
I never did get into Russia.
Very interesting. Yeah. I think. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your recollections with us, and this concludes our interview with Mary Agnes White.